From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made at 8:42 in the morning on September 11, 2001. Flight 93, as it was known, took off that morning nearly an hour late. Just 4 minutes later, the first plane would crash into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. Confusion gripped the country in those minutes, but that confusion melted into terror when the second plane would hit the South Tower 17 minutes later. And after another half an hour, a third plane would hit the Pentagon. What happened on Flight 93 became the stuff of legends, and it became a movie. And as it turns out, most of the accounts, as fantastical as they sound, are essentially true. After hijackers took over the plane, the passengers decided to rush the cockpit in an effort to wrest control from the terrorists. They had been told in phone calls about the other terror attacks. They knew what was going on. They did not want that plane to become a weapon. Flight 93 went down in rural Pennsylvania. All 44 people on board were killed. No one on the ground, though, was hurt. One of the heroes of that flight was a 31-year-old graduate of the University of Rochester named Jeremy Glick. He was an enormously popular person with friends and co-workers, and at home he had a 3-month-old baby daughter. He told his wife on the phone that day to have a good life, and he helped lead the group that tried to regain control of the plane. Jeremy's daughter, by the way, is now 17 years old. When she was 15, she gave a TEDx talk about overcoming tragedy. She explained that her father is most remembered for his act of heroism on 9/11, but he was much more than that, and she's right. He had degrees in English and philosophy. He'd been the U.S. National Collegiate Judo Champion. He loved buying chocolate milkshakes for friends, and he was quick to help others who were feeling down or alone. These are not sort of the apocryphal stories that we tell when we lose someone we love. That's who Jeremy Glick really was, and there are a lot of counts of this. Well, on June 2nd, Jeremy Glick's life will be celebrated when he is inducted posthumously into the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. This hour, we are honored to be joined by Jeremy's father, Lloyd Glick, who is on the line with us. And Lloyd, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine this unusually warm day.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, it's very nice to have you, and it's very nice to have Sandy Kleinberg here in studio with us, who is the co-chair of the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. Sandy, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've got an event coming up on June 2nd from 2 to 4 at the JCC, and you can get tickets now at the website rjs-hof.com. That's Rochester Jewish Sports-HOF for Hall of Fame.com, which has, by the way, been around for decades now, the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame here.
Yep, that's right. We established in 1962. It was set up by a man many people know here in town named Les Harrison, who was the founder of the Rochester Royals. He's got a plaque up at the Blue Cross Center right now, put up a few years ago. So, yeah, it's been around a while.
And you're honoring Jeremy Glick this year posthumously. You know, this will be the easiest question you ever get, but why Jeremy and how did you make that call?
Well, there's the obvious part of it, which was that he's simply a national hero, heroic, just the bravest person that I can possibly think of. But the other probably less obvious part of it is what he accomplished as an athlete while he was here in Rochester at the U of R in judo and rugby and other sports. And we want to celebrate that part of his life as well, what he did while he was alive. And he was a member of this community. He's sort of I think of him as an adopted son of Rochester.
Well, we're proud to claim him. And we'll get back to what the event is on June 2nd coming up here. You know, Lloyd's on the phone with us, the father of Jeremy Glick. And, you know, Lloyd, have you grown any more comfortable over the years talking about your son's heroism?
I would say yes. You know, the old adage about time helping, all right, it doesn't take away any of the pain or anguish, but it does kind of over time relieve that acute sense of loss, and it becomes like a dull ache. All right. And with that process, all right, it definitely becomes easier. Although it's still difficult. I mean, we were pretty close. So it is difficult. But nevertheless, given the opportunity, yes, I like to talk about Jeremy.
Sure. And we're going to spend the bulk of our time here today beyond talking about 9/11, and I think that that's appropriate. And in a moment, you're going to hear I pulled just a clip from his daughter's TEDx talk, which was just fantastic, by the way, which everyone should go listen to. It was really amazing stuff. So Lloyd, but to kind of get this out of the way, it's important, I think, that people understand that so much of the legend that we do hear about that day, as far as we can tell, I mean, those things really happened, that Jeremy and a group of passengers made that almost impossibly brave decision in that moment, didn't they?
No, they... What is unique is they actually took a vote. All right, talk about democratic tradition. They took a vote to say, "Hey, should we do this or should we not do?" And they voted overwhelmingly to say, "Yes, we're going to do that." And at that point, there was a considerable amount of planning. This was not something that, "Oh, let's go rush the cockpit," and they went off and did it. They did a lot of planning in terms of who would do what objects they had available to them could be used as weapons. So, for example, one of the things they used was the coffee service cart. And the cabin attendants actually brewed boiling water to use as a weapon. They fashioned or took anything they had, and they planned how they were going to go about it, because there were a couple of people out of the cockpit. And the objective, all right, we know this because they told us this, the objective was to prevent the aircraft, all right, from reaching its planned target. And we know almost positively from work that the FBI did, that the target was the Capitol, all right? And they picked this particular day because there was going to be a joint session later in the day, and therefore almost all the members of Congress would be present. And since they were having an international guest, the Supreme Court was also invited. So they expected that they would have almost the entire legislature, a significant part of the executive branch, and members of the Supreme Court. So if they had reached their destination at that point and succeeded in crashing the plane into the Capitol, at that point, the United States would have lost the greater part of its government. All right. So the objective was to take control, prevent the plane from reaching its destination, and theoretically, all right, if they managed to overcome all of the hijackers, including the ones in the cockpit, perhaps attempt to land the plane. I mean, that was the plan. They got at least the most important part of it done, right? They prevented the plane from reaching its target.
Boy, did they ever. And Lloyd, you know, the way you tell the story, it is gripping. And I'm struck by the fact that here you are as the father of one of these heroic people on that flight, telling the story rather calmly. How long did it take you to be able to do that?
Longer than it should have. All right. I made a mistake, and anybody else who suffers a tragic loss, all right, I urge them sincerely to seek professional help. I didn't do that, and in retrospect, it was a mistake. All right. Maybe it was through some sort of machismo ideal. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was just due to an overwhelming sense of inability to act. But whatever it was, that was a mistake. So I didn't seek professional help. And I would say it probably took, you know, 3 to 4 years. All right. Before I literally could function. I was not really functioning the way I should have been able to afterwards for, you know, that extended period of time. So in retrospect, it took me much longer than it should have. And that was a mistake.
Do you fly?
Oh, yes. All right. We do fly. After the event, we switched airline affiliations. We always used to fly United. We switched to Continental, which when they were acquired by United, we said, you know, we're going to fly United again. And we did. And we have ever since, where possible. I mean, the airline, I think, does not really bear any responsibility for what happened that day.
Sure.
The industry, however, does, right? Because years before, people were predicting that, you know, cockpit doors should be reinforced. There should be significantly increased security in terms of access to the cabin. The fact that the industry did not move ahead with that is something in retrospect that was a large mistake, right? It should have been done. And so at this point in time, you know, that is done. We have the TSA monitoring passengers, okay, which also was not done at that time, all right? As a matter of fact, on the phone, passengers, including Jeremy, expressed they were incredulous of the fact that, that these people were allowed to board because they had all the obvious signs of being nefarious, for sure. So, yes, we do fly.
and so, Lloyd, now when you look at everything that could be done to improve safety, is there anything that has not been checked off the list that you would create?
I'm not sure that I'm an expert enough in terms of airline security to answer that question. I think in general, all right, this country remains unbelievably vulnerable to cyber attacks in general. We know, for example, that it's possible to remotely take control of most cars today. The airline systems are supposed to be hardened against that, but as a layman, it's difficult for me to say whether that's true with all the systems that interplay in terms of both within the aircraft itself and external to the aircraft in terms of flight control systems, you know. The answer to your question is no, I don't think, all right, sufficient attention has been paid to all aspects of security with a special focus on cybersecurity.
I have such admiration for you, Lloyd, to say that you have your own ideas on what it would take, but also deferring to others with expertise. I mean, that's the American public could use more of that mentality. We're talking to Lloyd Glick, who is the father of Jeremy Glick, one of the heroes who died on 9/11, was part of a group on Flight 93 that helped Russ control that plane and prevent it from hitting its destination, likely the U.S. Capitol. And Lloyd Glick is coming to Rochester, who is right here in Rochester. The Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame is honoring Jeremy. He's going to be inducted posthumously on June 2nd at the JCC. More information on that coming up in a minute here. So Lloyd, if you don't mind, I'd like to listen to a clip of what Emmy had to say about her dad, if we could, because
I would love it. She is very much, from a personality standpoint, like Jeremy. All right, physically, she's at the other end of the spectrum. He was large. She is petite. All right. But from a personality standpoint, they both loom large, and they both have that ability to walk into a room and instantly take control. And physically, they both have really, they both had really, really curly hair. I mean, Jeremy,
well, his daughter was 3 months old. Emmy was 3 months old when Jeremy died on 9/11, and she's grown up to really be a remarkable young woman. So it's about 2 years ago, at the age of 15, she offered this TEDx talk on the subject of coping with tragedy. And she explained that as she got older, she had questions about what had happened to her father and also who her father was. So she went through a cycle of emotions. And I want to listen to how she concludes that talk. Here's Emmy.
My dad was just 31 on September 11th. And back home, he had a giant family who loved him. Not to mention a three-month-old baby who was basically just born, who he just wanted to spend time and get to know. I just was so mad. How could they take him away from me? But I got older, and my mom explained to me that we have to run on love and not hate. We have to forgive, just as my dad would have wanted. Every year, September 11th rolls around, and we get a constant reminder of what happened. Instead of just putting it behind us, which may have been easier, we don't. Instead, we meet where he's buried, and instead of just crying and grieving about his life, we smile and we celebrate. We go to one of his favorite restaurants, and we all order chocolate milkshakes because, as you know, that's what he loved. The kids play tag on the field outside and fish in a nearby pond. We look back on his whole life, not just his final moments, because that's not what made him a person. His final moments don't just define him, but his whole life did. Tragedies are inevitable, but it is up to us on how they shape us and what they make us become. As I take my path in life, I bring my dad with me wherever I go. Thank you.
That is Emmy Glick in a TEDx talk. So just an amazing young woman she has become. And so, Lloyd, I want to ask you a few things about that. First of all, she says over the years she's had to learn to try to let go of hate and anger. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I went through the same process, all right? Immediately after the event, obviously, there was enormous rush of anger. And that's made more difficult in this case, because the people who you're angry at, all right, are really amorphous. There's no one specific person. There's no one, you know, or even group that you can focus on. So if you allow it to happen, you know, that anger festers, it clouds your ability to go through the process of grieving, which you have to do. All right. So Emmy is absolutely correct in that regard. She is a remarkable young woman, by the way. She's an actress. Right. Right now, she's in the touring company of Fiddler on the Roof, and she's going to Syracuse in the fall. So, in their arts program,
and she commands the stage there. You can see that she does, and she speaks confidently. And frankly, I've got to say, Lloyd, you know, I mean, she was 3 months old when Jeremy died. She essentially really never knew him, and she's clearly worked hard to learn a lot about him, and that's been important to her. How important has that been, you think, for the family, that someone like Emmy can still find a way to get to know Jeremy?
Oh, I think it's very important. I think all of the grandkids, my grandkids, had to go through that process because you know, some of them are older, some of them are younger. But I think in large part, she was helped by Jeremy's wife, who was a remarkable, who is a remarkable person, and was a great partner for Jeremy. And Liz wound up marrying Jeremy's best friend, who we also knew. My wife and I knew from the time he was in grade school. So we have kept them very, very close. And we consider that their other children are grandchildren also. So we recognize, and she's right. When we do have family gatherings, especially on or around 9/11, the family tries to all get together, and we tell stories. Sometimes the same stories keep coming up, but people remember things touched off by the memory touched off by something that may have happened recently that, remember when? Somehow we hadn't heard that story before, but we do keep that tradition alive.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And so in a moment, I'm very eager to hear about his time in Rochester. And we're going to talk about his induction into the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. What would you say, Lloyd, for anybody who is going to have to encounter and work their way through loss? You said earlier this hour that maybe you would have done things a little differently. And everybody grieves differently. Everyone sort of responds to tragedy differently. But what do you think is maybe somewhat universal or that might be useful to anyone who might have to deal with loss as you have?
There's absolutely one thing that everyone should do, and that is get professional help and seek out someone with whom you have a rapport, right? It may not be the first or second person that you speak to, but definitely, you know, get professional help in working through that process. You will come out of it more quickly, and I think overall there'll be a better result. All right, so that would be my one piece of advice, which I think could apply to everyone.
I'm such a fan of therapy. I think it's a sign of strength for people who go, and we have to sort of get over some stigmas or taboos that people may have with it. And that resonates with me in so many different ways. And I think that's an important sentiment, Lloyd. I really appreciate that. Talking to Lloyd Glick, the father of Jeremy Glick, who is a name that you might know as an American hero, who died on 9/11, one of the passengers on Flight 93 that crashed in rural Pennsylvania, and the work of those passengers, as you heard Lloyd tell the story, to take a vote, to consider their options, and to decide to try to do something daring and brave and put their lives on the line. And they did that. And almost certainly what they did was prevented the fourth plane from hitting its target. Just an amazing act of heroism. And now Jeremy's going to be inducted into the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. He's going to be inducted on June 2nd at a ceremony at the JCC. And so after we take our only break of the hour, we're going to find out all about Jeremy and why he is going to be in this Hall of Fame. He had a fascinating life. 31 years, got a lot done, this guy did. And the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, they're thrilled to induct him. So let's get our only break, come back, talk to Sandy Kleinberg and Lloyd Glick next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections. Up until this year, one of the biggest conferences on wine in the world was held on the West Coast, but now it's moving to the Finger Lakes. We have some international guests who are going to tell us about their thoughts on the Finger Lakes' place in the wine world first hour. Then in our second hour, what do young adults with intellectual disabilities and their caregivers need to know as they prepare to exit the school system? Talk with you Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On June 2nd, here in Rochester at the JCC, from 2 to 4, it's a ceremony to honor not just Jeremy Glick, it's the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, and they have decades of work and many, many people they've honored over the years. Sandy Kleinberg is the co-chair of the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. And Sandy, I just got a note from a listener on Twitter named Jen who says, touched to hear that our classmate from the U of R, Jeremy Glick, will be honored next month here in Rochester. He is remembered as a great guy. Boy, everybody says that, you know? I mean, the stories about Jeremy are wonderful.
Yep. I haven't read one thing that said otherwise.
And I had an old college professor who told me on my first writing assignment on obituary, he said, Evan, everybody thinks everyone who passes away was perfect, and they're not. But here's the thing. I cannot find something to besmirch this man's reputation. Everyone who seemed to know him appreciated not only sort of his big personality, but just how generous of spirit he was. but he was also a hell of an athlete, right? So tell me how the sports part of this comes in.
Absolutely. The story goes that last fall, as I was reading through the news, I saw an article just before 9/11, a local article that was describing Jeremy and what he did. And, you know, I read the name and I saw that he was a student at the U of R and that he was a national collegiate judo champion. And I wondered how did this possibly get by us for 18 years that he accomplished what he accomplished. So essentially, I reached out to several websites, and eventually I found Jeremy's Heroes, which I'm sure Lloyd will talk about in a little bit. And that's how I got in touch with Lloyd, and lots happened since then, but here we are. Since then, I've learned a little bit about Jeremy's background as an athlete growing up. He started in judo at the age of 7. He played lacrosse, soccer, wrestling at the U of R later in life. He was the captain of the rugby team. He was just, it seems to me, to be a very much an all-around athlete. He was, I think, 6'1", 220, or he was a pretty big guy. He had a pretty prolific athletic life growing up.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, Lloyd. So where did Jeremy grow up? Where was home?
Home was initially Ordell, New Jersey, and later on Upper Saddle River, New Jersey.
And was doing all that stuff at an early age, huh?
Yeah. He went to Saddle River Day School, all right? From grammar school on up through high school graduation. And while there, he was a star soccer player. He played lacrosse, all right? He started a wrestling program there simply because there wasn't one and he wanted to wrestle. Right. So he and his older brother got together and they said, you know, we're going to start a program. They convinced the school and they did it. Jeremy was an expert skier. All right. He was a ski instructor at Wyndham. All right. He was a terrific waterboarder, you know. I guess that's partly a carryover from the ability to snow ski. There was very little that that came his way athletically that he couldn't be at least proficient at. He may not have been expert, but he was certainly proficient at almost anything he did athletically.
And how did someone with his background in New Jersey, a lot of different options, it's not that Rochester is obscure, but how did he end up kind of coming to see the University of Rochester and making this decision?
Well, it was funny. My oldest daughter went to Union. The next oldest, who was his older brother, decided he didn't want to go north because my daughter went north. So he went to Washington and lived. So Jeremy said, well, gee, I'm not going to go south. I'm going to go back north. So he started looking at schools in the north. He wanted to be at least within striking distance of some ski areas. But mostly he looked at what the schools had to offer, right? He liked philosophy. He liked some of the things that weren't necessarily popular, and he liked the atmosphere of the school. And he said, you know, this is where I want to go. And he did.
I think you told Scott Petoniak for his piece in the Rochester Business Journal that University of Rochester became a pretty easy choice once he had gotten a little taste of it. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For whatever reason, the school fit him like a glove. All right. He enjoyed almost every day, right, at the school. He never, in all the 4 years, never once complained about the school or anything that had to do with the school, which, having had 6 kids go through college, you know, is I will tell you that was an unusual, right, set of circumstances. Right? Anyway, so yeah, no, he really did love Fred Justin.
And in Scott's piece, he relates a story that, if you don't mind, Lloyd, I'd love for you to share with our listeners, something that stands out about Jeremy, which is the day that he had noticed, you know, somebody essentially kind of all alone and thinking about how he wanted to help out someone who was a shy kid who didn't have a lot of friends, and the kid had a bar mitzvah, didn't even know if anybody would show up. And why don't you tell me a little bit of that story, if you could?
Jeremy, you know, was very accepting of everybody, right? He didn't really, you know, form cliques. He didn't, you know, he just was a natural leader. People followed him. All right. In any case, this one boy, you know, was not popular. All right. He was kind of shunned and ignored. And he had a bar mitzvah and invited the class. It was a small school, so the class was fairly small. Jeremy, when he got the invitation, he immediately said, "I'm going." All right. Was not concerned whether anybody else would show up or not. And as it turned out, he was really the only one from the class who did show up. And by the way, related afterward that he had a really good time.
Can't imagine what that means to someone in that spot, that Jeremy stepped up to say, you know, everyone is deserving of love and attention and time. That's a huge story.
I mean, he didn't even think about it. I mean, that wasn't even a consideration. He just said, "Oh, gee, got an invitation. I'm certainly going to go."
I got to say this, Lloyd. You know, as the father of a son, that's the kind of thing that if my son ever does something like that, that will be so much more important than how much money you make, what your job is. That is the goal in life: is can you raise a person to be that kind of person? And that's who your son was. And that's just that. I love that story. I just find that so beautiful. And clearly, you've done so much right here. I hate to kind of turn it this way, but how, to me, the part that I think is almost enraging even to this day is that's who Jeremy Glick was. He was going to make sure that everybody felt loved, that even though he was popular, he's not going to look down on anybody. And he loses his life from people who are making judgments about what, you know, what is pure and acceptable and what is not, and who is deserving of life and who is not. It's just a terrible, horrific tragedy. And I admire you for kind of getting past that in some way, Lloyd. I mean, that's just got to be very difficult. I just have so much admiration for you.
Well, I think Jeremy's my oldest daughter, my oldest child, Jennifer. All right. Almost immediately after the event, started an organization called Jeremy's Heroes. It's a 503 organization, and has certain specific goals and objectives. All right, one, we wanted to help children. All right, and she thought that she was going to make available to underprivileged kids the ability to participate in sports, all right, in return for which they had to give back to their community, all right? And that has been active now in Harlem, in New York City, for the past 17 years, all right? People can check it out. There is a website, jeremysheroes.org. All right. We do hold a charity golf event once a year. That's one of the prime sources of donations. But we certainly approve that it does work. We will support individuals, individual athletes, right? But the prime objective is to make these programs available to kids. In other words, they will run a basketball program after school. But it's not open to everybody. Kids have to earn their way in, all right? Show that they're serious about school, that they understand that, you know, if they're in the program, there's an obligation to give back to their community in some way, shape, or form. And we'd love to expand that that organization to more schools. So that's
beautiful.
An objective.
And that's beautiful. Jeremy'sHeroes.org if you want to learn more about what Lloyd, Jeremy's father, is talking about there. By the way, at the University of Rochester, he was a pretty good athlete too. Sandy, give me a little snapshot of what Jeremy Glick was doing at University of Rochester.
Well, in addition to being the captain of the rugby team at that time, Jeremy also on his own in his senior year, I believe it was, in 1993, decided to travel to San Francisco to compete in the National Collegiate Judo Championships. My understanding is that he did that completely on his own. He had no support system. The U of R doesn't have a judo team. It's not really an NCAA governed sport. So he did that all on his own. And when he arrived, he found a familiar face in his sensei, Sensei Ogasawara. I hope I said that correctly. I'll just refer to him as sensei from now on. From his childhood, when he was starting from the age of 7, he found him there coaching the West Point Cadets. So sensei took the time while he was there, while he wasn't coaching his own team, to be in Jeremy's corner. And Jeremy, I guess, ran through all the competitors and won the 86-kilogram weight class, essentially a complete unknown in the tournament. And I have a quote here from the Judo Journal from 1993, and it says, "To everyone's surprise, former national junior champ and top national-level contender Randy Amamura, Fresno State, lost to little-known Jeremy Glick of Rochester University." They didn't even know the name of the school. They thought it was Rochester
University.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So I think that just tells you about the type of person he was. He just got up and did it, you know.
I love that. Lloyd, was he proud of that one?
Very much so, yes. It took a lot of work because there was no easily accessible dojo. So he really had to travel and make time during the week to travel to a dojo in order to practice. He first had to find it, and then he had to work. And he did. He also worked while he was at school. So. And yet he managed to find time to do all those things.
Well, we're talking to Lloyd Glick and Sandy Kleinberg. Sandy is the co-chair of the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. Lloyd is the father of Jeremy Glick, a University of Rochester graduate who died on 9/11, was on Flight 93, one of the passengers who made that heroic decision to rush the cockpit. And Jeremy is going to be inducted on June 2nd at the JCC. So tell us about what's going on that day and what you want people to know, Sandy.
Well, the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, as it implies, is really about a few different things, especially the people we induct into the Hall of Fame. We also honor high school students that have been given the honor of All Greater Rochester. We have 3 of them this year. We have a smattering of other awards as well. But our main function is to induct and maintain the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. We also help athletes when they're traveling to the World Maccabi A Games in Israel and the Pan Am Games. I'm wearing my shirt today.
You're on radio, man.
I know. I just wanted to show you.
It's okay. I'm just joking. Yeah. Go ahead.
So we
it's
help.
A great looking shirt.
Oh, thanks. We help send athletes to those games. And moving forward, we'd also like to start not just looking back, but looking forward and helping set up training programs for young athletes at the JCC, strength and conditioning programs, stuff like that, that we want to start doing as well.
So it's June 2nd, 2 to 4 at the JCC. Tickets available now.
Correct. Yep.
What's the website?
The website is rjs-hof.com.
Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, rjs-hof.com. You got an interesting list of past inductees.
I did.
Some things that may stand out. Can you share some?
Absolutely. So I already mentioned Les Harrison, who was the founder of the Hall of Fame. He not only founded the Hall of Fame, but he did some wonderful things for Rochester, founded the Rochester Royals, who were NBA champions. He helped found the NBA. He brought Dolly King and Pop Gates to the Rochester Royals, which most people don't know that broke the color barrier a year before Jackie Robinson was signed in Brooklyn. Today, the Royals are the Sacramento Kings, but they were here for about 10 years. We have other contributors as well in the Hall of Fame. Some of them are pretty famous people. One is Gabe Paul. He was the general manager of the Cleveland Indians and the New York Yankees. Everyone probably knows Maury and Naomi Silver of the Rochester Red Wings, David and Wendy Dworkin of the Rochester Rhinos, Josh Lewin, TV play-by-play person in Detroit, New York, and other cities. We have some famous coaches that are in our Hall of Fame. One's Red Holtzman. He was not only the coach of the Royals, but the New York Knicks. He has two NBA championships under his belt. David Sarokin coached the Chicago Fire and the LA Galaxy and the MLS. We have Nat Goodhart, who's a pretty prolific fencing coach who's here in Rochester. And then there's the athletes, many athletes. Jeremy is the 182nd person inducted into the Hall of Fame. Most of them are athletes. Maybe the most famous athlete we have is Adam Podlish, who played for the Chicago Bears and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Herman Goldberg is another, going back a bit, he's one of our inductees. He played baseball. He was in the 1936 Olympics. So if you think about that, a Jewish guy with the last name Goldberg in the 1936 Olympics in Germany, he was one of five athletes of Jewish faith at those games. And I read that they actually put his name up with a URGH spelling so that it wouldn't appear to be a Jewish name on the scoreboard. Remarkable. And many, many others, lots of athletes.
Remarkable stuff. And so on June 2nd, Lloyd, Jeremy's going to be inducted here in Rochester. He has earned two posthumous honors on the national level, the Arthur Ashe Courage Award and the Medal for Heroism, the highest civilian honor bestowed by the Sons of the American Revolution. There are, you know, there are other honors I know. What does that mean for you and the family? And I'm not asking that sort of glibly or as a setup. I'm curious to know if you sort of get kind of numb to that, or does it all still sort of matter?
I think it does matter. All right. Because of, you know, the particular award, but just for the fact that Jeremy's remembered. All right, that people say, hey, this was an act worthy of remembrance. But even more importantly, this was a person who was worthy of remembrance. I think that's important. I mean, Jews have a tradition of making sure that the dead are remembered. All right, it's something that's required. Right, because the feeling is that if the person is not remembered, the soul does not rest well. But on a more non-religious level, I think it's important for the survivors and the family that people say, hey, this was a person worth remembering, and he did make contributions that affect all of us, and that's why he should be remembered. So in that context, yes, I think it's important.
So, Lloyd, if I could, I've got an email that I think reflects exactly what you're talking about. And I imagine this probably never gets old hearing stuff like this. One of our listeners named Joel just sent this note that said the following. Among other things, Jeremy Glick was, and forever will be, a brother of the Rochester chapter of the Alpha Delta Phi fraternity, a historic and literary society. As an undergraduate, he was elected, unanimously I was told, president of the fraternity. Years later, as a member of the class of 2010, I ended up joining the same chapter of the same fraternity and also ended up being elected, although not quite unanimously, I must admit, president of the fraternity. I've had the pleasure of meeting many of Jeremy's classmates and close friends who continue to maintain a relationship with the university and the Brotherhood. I could share any number of stories that I've heard about him, but if I've learned anything about Jeremy Glick, it was this. Jeremy was not being a hero on 9/11. Jeremy was being Jeremy. Whether it was treating people with the respect that they deserved, handling some rowdy troublemakers in the chapter house, or tackling the life and death threat of terrorism head-on and literally face-to-face, Jeremy was being Jeremy. The entire chapter house on the University of Rochester campus is dedicated to Jeremy, and deservedly so. His amazing story continues to be kept alive, even in current undergraduates who were born now after 9/11. We all love you and miss you, Jeremy. Thank you. That is from Joel. Lloyd, I just wanted you to hear that.
I had not heard of that before. Thank you very much, Evan. That kind of made my day.
Sandy, that's a powerhouse email, isn't it, Sandy?
Absolutely.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
If you could find a way to kind of forward that.
Oh,
to me,
yes.
You can bet.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We will make sure that you have that one. I'd be happy to do that. And Sandy, everything you've learned about Jeremy Glick is sort of reflected in this single email, isn't it?
I think it was put perfectly. Yeah. And, you know, not too much of a pitch, but I would love for the fraternity and the former rugby players, everyone just to come and show appreciation.
What do you mean not too much of a pitch? You're on a radio show. You got an event coming up. You're allowed to mention it. It's okay.
Here's a pitch. Absolutely. Okay. Come show your appreciation really recognize Jeremy for what he did.
Yeah, Joel, I'm thrilled you sent that note, and we'll pass it on to the family. But what he's talking about is June 2nd at the JCC, the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, honoring Jeremy Glick, and so they'd love to see you there from 2 to 4. Tickets now at rjs-hof.com. By the way, Lloyd, does it start to get kind of crazy that there are people born after 9/11 who are going to college, thank this year. It's amazing time. The passage of time. Time is relentless, isn't it? It's really something.
Yeah, yes, it is. I mean, there's not much we can do about that, right? we better learn to accept it. Yeah.
Well, Lloyd, one last question for you, and we'll let you go here. You know, you mentioned earlier this hour that it took you some years before you could really kind of speak and tell the story of what Jeremy was involved with on the plane that day on 9/11. And that time doesn't, you know, heal all wounds, but it certainly helps in some ways. What do you think about first when you think about your son? What comes to mind when you think about Jeremy?
Hugs. Jeremy was a big guy. All right. And whenever we would either greet each other or say goodbye, we'd give each other hugs. And it was, I always know he kind of let me kind of squeeze him a little bit harder than he squeezed me. But that's absolutely the first memory that comes to mind. That I think about, you know, and then of course there's a flood of others, but you know,
that's
when
beautiful.
You say that, yeah. You know, that's what I remember.
That's beautiful, right. And you know, and may it forever be. Lloyd, thank you for your generous hour that you gave us for this program of sharing the stories of your son. The word hero is thrown around way too loosely, but that's your son. That's Jeremy. That's who he was. And our country, I hope, will always be grateful for that. Thank you, Lloyd. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciated the time. And it's been a pleasure talking to you. And thank you very much, Sandy, for getting me to do this.
No problem.
Well, I know they appreciate it. That is Lloyd Glick, the father of Jeremy Glick, joining us here. Sandy Kleinberg, co-chair of the Rochester Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. So we'll close the hour one more time. People need to know what's coming up on, what's the day? What day of the week is June 2nd, by the way?
It's a Sunday. It's a Sunday, June 2nd, 2 to 4 at the JCC, 1200 Edgewood Avenue, rjs-hof.com.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
My
pleasure. Appreciate what you do here and for sharing this story with us. Our thanks to the entire team behind the glass today. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer of Connections. And great having Bob and everyone else behind the glass here. Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Been an amazing 2 hours today. Powerful stuff. Always appreciate having our listeners with us here. I'm Evan Dawson, and have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.